What's up, everybody? Welcome to Full Draw Friday. This week, we're continuing our conversation from last week about public land betting. We're going to get into kind of dissecting the betting and the area around it once you've found it. So that's what we're going to get into here on Full Draw Friday this week. Sorry we're coming at you a little bit late. We had some delays this week, but that's what we're going to rock with. So before we get into it, though, don't forget about the Racks Big Game Supplements. They are our sponsor, our main partner for these episodes. If you guys are looking for good quality minerals and protein blocks that are going to give the deer what they need, how they want it, go check out racksmineral.com. You can use the discount code FULLDRAW, and that'll get you 15% off of everything in your order. Austin, you've had a busy week, man. We were just talking about some stuff you've had going on. So, again, we're kind of putting this one out a little bit later on Friday than maybe we normally would, but
I was gonna
valid
say,
reasons.
Delays feeling nice. Delays sounds nice.
Especially when we recorded last week's on Tuesday.
Yeah, no kidding. I wasn't even sure I was going to make it home in time to record. And then on top of that, hauling a trailer an hour and a half in this wind today has been, that was a circus.
I bet.
On my way home today.
That you guys are getting circus. This wind too, huh?
Oh, it's brutal. Yeah. It was brutal. I got hailed on while I was finishing my planting today. Of
Did
course,
you?
An open cab tractor. Oh, yeah. Open cab tractor. I felt like I just got pelted with a bunch of paintballs.
Yeah, that's fun.
I'm like, this is not cool.
That's why you're wearing long sleeves today, huh? You're hiding all those welts.
Exactly.
Yeah, we got a decent chance for some storms tonight. So it's not supposed to come till later, though. Hopefully, we don't lose power or anything while we're trying to record. But that'd be
no
something
kidding.
That would definitely happen. So.
We're a little ahead of you guys, so we got it first.
Did you guys, was it mostly just hail and wind for you?
Hail, wind, and kind of spotty showers. I got missed by the worst rain.
Yeah.
I think the rain actually hit home here, but I was an hour and a half northwest, so nice. I just barely missed the worst of the actual storm.
Awesome. Well, this week, like I said, we're going to follow up on where we left off of last week's episode, which was the locating betting. So if you guys didn't listen to that, make sure you go back and check it out because it's going to kind of tie everything in. These will stand alone too, I think, but we did start with the locating part, talked about maps. We talked about how to decipher buck betting versus doe betting, all that kind of stuff. And we kind of led into what we're going to talk about today, which is what to do after you find the bedding. Once you've located it, once you've decided it's that buck bedding area, what's the next step? So, Austin, I'll let you jump in right there, and we'll just start with that. What, after you've located it, you've decided that it's buck bedding, and it's potentially a target buck, or, you know, at least you're interested in seeing more about it, learning more about the spot. Yep. What's your next step after finding that bed?
So, in my scouting process, this is where I really slow down and grid search. So, you know, being efficient with time and, you know, covering as much ground as possible, it's important to move past areas that aren't as important, you know, and then spend your time on areas that are. So this is exactly one of those things. Once you have located that buck bedding or potential buck bedding, you know, this is where I slow down. This is where I take my time, I grid search, and, you know, this time of year, you can grid search, obviously, without messing it up.
Right.
But, you know, now I'm looking for every single detail possible, right? This is where I make every single mark, every significant rub, every scrape at, you know, converging trails, any and every kind of mast tree. Usually I'll find some kind of a bed also. So, you know, the oval, the matted down area in an oval, you got some hair in it. I always like to confirm it with hair because it could be a lot of different things.
For sure.
But if it's got hair in it, you got a bed.
Especially,
you know,
around some
obvious.
Of the places we hunt, it could just be some homeless guy.
Very true. That's a good point. But everything, mark everything, because in the moment, it helps me put together, kind of piece together movement patterns, but also post trip, I can evaluate the map, see where there's kind of a line of travel. You know what I mean? You'll find the more marks you make and the more notes you take in the moment, you'll start to piece together movement patterns. You know what I mean? And that's where you're going to be. That's what you want to key in on. And then, in the moment, you'll start seeing the patterns kind of developing. And that's when I'm going to start paying attention to those specific locations on, okay, well, this is kind of his main entrance, main exit. Try to figure out some huntable trees. Is it even accessible to hunt? What is he possibly going to bed on? What wind is he going to possibly bed in that on? Where's he? How? What can he see in that bed? And especially if you have an oval and you find an actual bed, sometimes I like to actually get down to deer level and see what he sees. Look around, see what he sees. Look, what does the forest look like at his level when he's bedded down? You know what I mean? And then think, a lot of times he'll bed with the thickest cover kind of behind him, and he'll use the wind through that, right? So he'll wind everything through that, and then he can see everything else in front of him, right? And then from there, where are his access or exit routes? Like if you bump him, where are his exit routes? And then you start piecing together little things like that, and figuring out where most of the trails tend to enter the bedding or exit the bedding, and you figure out sides of the bedding that are used more often than other sides of the bedding. And that's how you can kind of piece together how those deer prefer to use it. You know what I mean? But I will leave no stone unturned, basically. Like when I'm in an area like that, that's that interesting, I will turn every rock possible. Gather as much intel as possible while I'm there. And then I can take all of that intel with me going into season, and I'm good to go. You know what I mean? Because so a lot of times these bucks, they have some kind of hidden movement, and you could easily be overlooking it if you don't take the time to look for it. You know what I mean? It's not always the obvious location is the best location. You know what I mean? So sometimes you just keep an open mind. Not sometimes, all the time. Just keep an open mind, leave no stone unturned, and just really collect all the intel possible in that location before you leave. You're already in there. Make the disturbance, like it doesn't matter, right? But also, I like to be as quiet as possible. When I find a spot like that, I like to access it from downwind and be quiet, because that visual cue of watching a deer get bumped could tell you a lot. Or you actually bump him and you see him and you know exactly what kind of deer you're after, right? So, without it, that if you can run cameras, that's great. You can get a visual on what that deer looks like. But just if you don't evaluate, then evaluate the size of the rubs. And it's not always the size of the tree is what tells you, it's the height of the rub.
That's
So,
you mentioned the visual part of it. That's something I was gonna mention. Also, is that if you do happen to bump one, even this time of year, pay attention to where he goes. So if you're careful getting in there, you might be able to get close enough to actually visually see that deer take off in a direction. And that's going to tell you, okay, what direction does he like to go? Where is maybe his secondary bedding? Where is his safe spot to go to once he's bumped out of his primary bedding? And then if someone moves in, especially public land like we're talking, if you've got pressure and bumping him out of his bed, then you know where to go once the pressure hits. But
Absolutely.
overall, like when you're talking about dissecting this and turning over every stone possible and looking for everything, putting all this data together, essentially what you're doing is trying to build this whole intel package on this particular buck that's in this spot. And all that is going to tell you what he does going to the bedding, coming from the bedding, which direction of travel he's taken. Like you're saying, if you find these main trails with scrapes on them, if you find a scrape line on a ridge on a trail that heads out of that bedding, and at the end of it is a big ag field, Like, you know, he's probably leaving his bedding, going out there
yep.
in the evenings, or that's where he's coming back in the mornings. He's working those scrape lines in the mornings after checking the ag field in the evenings, and he's heading back into his bedding. Same thing, like you said, with the mast trees. That's especially one. If you find a trail going out to, like, a grove of oaks or a big white oak flat, and then past that is an ag field, that's probably his staging area in the evenings, right? There's a good chance mm-hmm. of that, at least. So you can learn so much once you find that bedding if you just, like you said, go out from there, create a web, find everything that you can, because it's not just, oh, hey, there's a trail, oh, there's a couple of scrapes. It's, no, you start putting that stuff down on a map, and then you see, even if you can't physically see it while you're there, you start seeing a direction of travel, yeah. where he likes to go, where he's coming from, and then that's kind of what's going to help you kill that deer ultimately.
Absolutely. And well, one of my biggest realizations at, you know, throughout the years as a hunter is that there is no such thing as a nocturnal buck.
Right.
Somewhere that buck is moving during daylight. Mm-hmm. There is no such thing as a truly nocturnal buck.
Right.
That buck is getting up and browsing at some point during the day.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's up to me to figure out if that is in a location that I can hunt. You know what I mean? Is that buck's daylight pattern huntable for me?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or if it's not, then find a buck that is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yep. So that's why it's so important finding these bedding areas is, and like you said, the mast trees on just on the outskirts of it is because that buck will get up mm-hmm. at one point and move
mm-hmm.
and eat during the day. They do not bed down all day and stay in the exact same bed all day,
right?
Bedded down. So that they might not cover ground, right? They might not move a mile,
right?
You know, during the day like they will during the rut, and that they may only move, you know, during certain times of the year, 100 yards mm-hmm. or something along those lines, right? It may yep. be a very small daylight movement, but he is still moving
right
somewhere. You know what I mean? So, yep. So what, once you get this idea that he's a nocturnal buck, man, I can't kill him. Well, no, he's actually daylighting somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's just either on your property or it's not.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So, and if it is on your property, it's up to you to figure out where.
Yeah.
So, and, that's where, you know, with hunting pressure outside the rut, especially, you're talking about these deer are moving shorter stints, mm-hmm. right? They're not moving as far. So you got to get in tight. You got to know exactly what he's going to do. And, you know, when he comes in and out of that bedding area and possible scrapes nearby and mast trees that he might browse on and mm-hmm. staging, you know, heading out for the evening. And the tighter you can get without messing it up, the more opportunity you've got to actually kill that deer.
Yeah, that's when it comes to what you're looking at after you find that bedding, you know, that's what you're talking about with the, especially with the nocturnal thing to me, because most of the driver of that, in my opinion, is guys are just getting pictures of a certain buck and the only pictures they're getting of them are at night. So, well, he must be nocturnal. No, he's probably just making it to your property after dark. So he's probably bedding a significant distance away, more than likely, right? Or he's just not, he could be bedding somewhat close, but he's just not moving that much. He's one of those bucks that doesn't move as much as others. You yep. see that a lot with those 5 and 6 year olds, especially. But like you said, it doesn't mean that he's not moving in the daylight. And once you find the bedding and specifically his bed or where he likes to be, the closer you can get to that, the more chance you're going to have of seeing him in the daylight. Mm-hmm. Now, you have to be careful with that because, like we said, you don't want to bump him out of that bed during the season. You don't want to put too much pressure on him. But that's something else that you're going to learn from walking around it right now. If you find it now, and like you said, you don't really care about intrusion because he's in 2-3 weeks, he's going to forget about it. And in the season, that matters because that gives someone else 2-3 weeks to kill him. But right now, yep. he's probably going to come back because that's where he feels safe. So you go in there and you dissect the place, and not only are you looking for where he's going, where he's coming from, but you're also trying to find out, where can I go, where can I come from, get in and out safely as close to this bed as possible without bumping yep. him. What winds are going to be good for this? Where do I have cover? Where do I have terrain that I can work around? So if you can go down and slip in on the back of a ridgetop, if he's bedding on the north side of it and you can slip in on the south side, like especially if it's one of those deals where you know, you're getting a north wind, the thick stuff's to his back, but you're just over the roll where he can't really see you. If you can slip in there quiet and get close to his bed, you're going to have that much more chance of seeing him in the daylight. So that's something, too, I think that's important to remember when you're building the intel on the buck. You're also trying to figure out what entry and exit routes you can take, where your best cover is, getting down to his eye level, like you mentioned, to see what he actually can and cannot see. Because you're standing up at, you know, 6 foot tall, maybe you're a shorter guy, even 5'6", you're still going to be able to see a lot more than that deer, you know, standing up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or potentially less.
If you're in a cedar thicket, you know, you get down on your hands and knees, you can see a whole lot.
Yes.
Under those limbs than you can standing up.
Yeah, and you could absolutely miss something that either he can see or can't see. You might miss a way that you could get in that you thought you couldn't while you were standing there looking. Or you might think that something looks like you can get in and you can't. So I think that's important, too, to also kind of figure out your strategy around how you can get in and hunt that deer so you're not waiting on just a chance encounter on November 8th with this buck that you've only been getting pictures of at night.
Oh, 100%. And that's like, you know, when I'm talking about dissecting and grid searching, I know we kind of talked about this beforehand, but simultaneously figuring out what the deer is doing in the bedding and figuring out how I can hunt it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Access possibilities, like you said, tree stand locations and how I can actually make a hunt on that deer. And that's what I probably the biggest advantage of private over public is the sanctuary idea,
mm-hmm.
right? It if you're not hunting tight to these beds on public, you might not kill that deer
right
at all, right? But with lower pressure that you control on private, that deer is going to feel comfortable enough to move more of a distance mm-hmm. during daylight, right? That is a huge advantage. You can leave a block to itself and let the deer have it.
Yep.
Right. And then hunt the outskirts, right? And minimize that pressure and make it easier to get in and out of with less opportunity of bumping those deer off property
mm-hmm.
and whatnot. And that's a huge advantage that you can have with managing your property over what you have to do on public yep. most of the time.
Yep. And if you want to get set up in that situation, we got just the guy to talk to. You guys can go talk to Rodney. We call that a segue in the business. You go talk to Rodney Hawkins. He is with Midwest Farm and Land. They specialize in recreational property, just like what we're talking about here in Illinois. If you guys are looking for ground to buy, you want to manage it, you want to hunt, do what we're doing, check them out. You can get a hold of Rodney. Even if you're trying to sell something, they can do that for you too. He's also got his own business called RG Outdoors. You can find them on Facebook at RG Outdoors. You can also email them at rgoutdoors@yahoo.com. But they've got Tacticam trail cameras. They're working on getting Radix cameras back in. They've got Radix blinds. I know he just got a shipment of those in. He's got all of their stands and stuff. He's got a couple e-bikes. He's working on bringing in new stuff all the time, too. So if you guys are, especially if you're in the Southern Illinois area, make sure you check him out. You can give him a call at 618-925-3153. And any questions you got about anything he's got going on, you can ask, and he'll tell you more. The sanctuary thing, that's something I don't know that we've done a consultation where I haven't at least recommended, maybe even if it's not just, hey, dedicated, this is a sanctuary spot, like, hey, absolutely do not go in here unless you kill a buck and he dies in this spot. You know what I mean? And I usually will mark it on a map, like, this is sanctuary, like, and that's not necessarily just a bedding area. But it's an area, even a little bit outside that bedding, that you just do not go into from September until the end of January, you know. But on public land, those areas are what you have to find. When you find that bedding, that's where you know those areas are at, right? Because that buck's not going to bed mm-hmm. somewhere he's not comfortable. I know you've talked before, he might be bedding in a spot where he has some traffic around him, mm-hmm. but they're going past him. Right. Or no one's hunting that location. They might be kind of traveling through,
but staying.
They're not staying and putting pressure on them. But once you find those bedding places, you can figure out that's probably, and you start seeing those rubs and those scrapes, that's where he likes to spend a lot of time. And I think you do have to get in on those places on public ground if you want to be successful.
100%. And even sometimes, I also believe sometimes on private, even with being able to control your hunting pressure, whatnot, I believe that there's some bucks that just are wary deer. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And those deer, you just got to go get. Yep. You know, so it, having the ability and the knowledge of the area of, if you had to go get that deer, you know how to go get that deer,
right,
without messing it up, you know? So, you know, that's just understanding the type of deer that you're hunting. And obviously on public, it is a little bit more difficult until you start collecting more intel on that animal and, you know, maybe getting some encounters with them. But, you know, since the grid search side of things, it's also great collecting as much intel as possible this first round you enter, because even if you don't kill him this year, go back next year, right? And if you see, and you know, we'll get into in-season scouting and seeing if the deer is still there and how to hunt him, you know, in season and whatnot from this intel. We'll get into that another day. But next year, if you didn't kill him, go back in and do the same thing, but find which scrapes stayed, which scrapes were not fresh again, which rubs were still there, which trails, like find the consistent ones, right? There's going to be some that are just happened throughout the season. Some scrapes happen just random. Some rubs happen just random. But find the ones that are always there.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment you find the ones that are always there, hunt them.
Yes.
Like, those are the ones you need to start paying attention to, because that's where you're going to start figuring out his primary movement instead of his random movement.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
So that's a way that I'll take with years of intel is, you know, dissecting the same bedding area, and it's faster where the sign is, right? Mm-hmm. So you can go straight to the sign, figure out what's new, figure out what's the same, make note of it, and then move on.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And then hunt them. And then the important thing on top of that is going to be your in-season deal. Like, that you can only collect the same, you can only mark the same rub or same scrape so many times. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so at that point, it's just collecting actual encounters and figuring out and going from there and seeing what he's doing actually in person, and then making a move from there.
Yep. I think that's a good place to stop this one and pick up next week. So we'll make this a 3-part series, and we'll come back next Friday. We'll talk about just what you're talking about, building those encounters, actually what we're going to do to hunt these spots, how we're going to hunt them, how we're going to make it happen. Because now we've located them, we've gone through the steps of figuring out how he's using that bedding area and when. And then once you get those two things, the next step is to hunt it. So I want to talk about that next week on part 3 of this series. Before we do get out of here, don't forget about Flambeau Outdoors, too, guys. They're our other partner for Full Draw Friday. They've got some of the most affordable, highest quality decoys and storage solutions on the market. Their bow cases are great, and their gun cases, and their turkey line, their waterfowl line, and their whitetail line of decoys I've all had really good luck with. And again, like I said, they're affordable. They're not going to break the bank on those things. So you got anything else to leave them with for this week before we get into part 3?
Not much, man. I think we covered it pretty good. It's the, like I said, the next thing is your in-season encounters.
Yep.
That's the moneymaker.
Awesome. Well, that is Austin from Tactical Approach Outdoors. I'm Canyon with Ridge Hunter. We will catch you guys on part 3 of Public Land Bedding next Friday. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you then.